You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
From Shakespeare to Schwartz, from Fosse to Alvin Ailey, from Sondheim to Bareilles, from McNally to Fay, it happened to the greats, it still happens every day. When lightning strikes, it's the moment you know. When lightning strikes, where you're meant to go. You can stand and shout Eureka, do whatever you like. You'll never forget the moment when lightning strikes.
Hi, this is Gerald Brunner, and you're listening to When Lightning Strikes, where we talk about that heart-thumping, tingly mic drop moment that led you to becoming an artist. My guests today are Charlotte Moore and Kieran O'Reilly, who founded Irish Repertory Theatre in 1988. And ever since, they have been passionately devoted to bringing Irish and Irish-American works to the stage. They present everything from the classics to the contemporary as they nurture new generations of Irish and Irish-American playwrights. It's now in its 31st season, and they've presented over 190 productions, worked with more than 500 company members, and with Kieran and as producing director and Charlotte as artistic director, the Irish Rep is the only year-round theater company in New York City that is devoted to bringing Irish and Irish-American work to the stage. They've won the Drama Desk Award, the Adder Critics Circle Award, the Lucille Lortel Award, the Jamson Theaters Award for their excellence. And I love this detail. In 2019, you were both inducted into the Irish America Hall of Fame and received Ireland's Presidential Distinguished Service Award for the Irish Abroad. Welcome.
How are you? Well, I think I'm
back. Thank you. It's great to be here.
What did you say?
I said, on that note, we'll say goodbye.
I always think when I go to the Irish Rep, or would you prefer I say the Irish Repertory Theatre? Do you have a preference?
We call us the Irish Rep, so.
But I always know when I go to the Irish Rep that I'm going to be, not to be so dramatic, but it's going to be a transforming experience. I love seeing, for example, your Finian's Rainbow and how you transformed that play and how it was really scaled down, not in terms of the inner life of the musical, but what I love that it was, that there weren't 40 people on stage, and yet the feelings are all there, the emotions are all there, the passion is all there. I love what you do. I love your commitment and your passion to the theater. So thank you for being here. Can you take me to the 1980s and how this all came together?
Well, Kieran, you do it. Kieran and I were in a play together. We met in a play together, directed by the great Brian Murray. And it was his idea, really. He one day said, why don't we do a play? Why don't we do some plays? And so I said, fantastic, great. And so we did one, didn't we, Kieran?
This is true. Well, it was 1988, and there seemed to be a dearth of theater. There's so many different ethnicities had their own theater company in New York City, the capital city of theater in the world, and the Irish Arts Center was there, but theater was just one small component of their organization, and so there was not one full-time theater company. So we felt that was something that needed to be fixed. So we started with one of the great Irish plays, Sean O'Casey's The Plough and the Stars, which, only had 16 people in it and four different sets. So that's, of course, the show to start with.
I had no clue, Gerald. I had no clue.
Charlotte directed it and directed it wonderfully. And we got within our first show, within our first week, the New York Times came and reviewed us. and we just started from there, and then we did another play. We had actually planned when we began that we would have a season of plays. So we had booked the 18th Street Playhouse for a full season. So we began, even though we didn't have the money for one show, never mind a season of shows, but that's, you know, that had never stopped us before. So, or since.
And then you built a home eventually on 22nd Street. Now you have several theaters there, but so many people dream of creating a theater company and have that passion, and but they don't have the means, and they think, oh, I can't do it. What gave you that can-do spirit?
Gerald, often when things come up and we are making plans, I just say, I can't do this. I can't go on. And Kieran said, always says, we'll just go on. We will go on, and we do go on. And that's how it was in the beginning. I said, well, that's it. We've done this play. We've done these plays. And now what? And he says, we'll just go on. And we have always gone on. And that's how we've done 150 or 160 now.
And
he's heroic, but don't tell him I said so.
And there's so much to talk about. Let's start with your lightning strikes moments for each of you, because you're both originally your actors, right? When did you know you had to be artists and that this was your path? Can you point to sort of a moment when you knew this is what you had to do?
Go ahead, Charlotte.
Go ahead, Kieran.
for me, I was very, I was 19 years of age. I had come to America for the summer, completely lost, completely having no idea whatsoever what did I wanted to do with my life. I had, ideas of Hollywood and all of those things without ever having been at, on the stage or having, and I was in a bar, as Irish people sometimes are. There was a technical rehearsal going on across the street at a theater at the Irish Arts Center across the street from the pub. And some of the actors came in on the break and they were grumbling about an actor who hadn't shown up for a tech rehearsal. And one of them who knew me said, well, why don't you just come over and stand in for him? So I went over and I stood into him. I was playing a police officer giving evidence in court, so I didn't need to learn lines. I could just read the evidence. And I thought, this is fun. I can just read the evidence. And so the guy never came back, and I stayed in the role. And suddenly, when the lights shone on me on the stage, I said, well, this is exactly what I want to do. That was my lightning strikes moment.
That is extraordinary. That's like your Schwab's drugstore moment.
Oh, yeah. The same beauty as well. Yeah.
So you had no experience, no training, nada. And you just what can you describe that feeling of when you were that detective? What was it that was so thrilling that made you think, I need more? I need more of this.
Well, I was always I felt I was an awkward kid in a lot of ways and kind of shy in a lot of ways. So it wasn't as much, and though it certainly was, that when the lights come up and you suddenly feel elevated in the world, but it was the camaraderie of the theater people that just absolutely changed my life as well, because suddenly I was talking to people who kind of knew what I was talking about. And that was that we don't know where the hell we are, and we're all trying to find, and we're all trying to search for things. And I just hadn't been around people who thought like that and spoke like that. And it was utterly thrilling. And that's really what changed.
How long had you been in the States at that point in your life?
I was there about maybe 10 weeks at the time.
What?
And I was a doorman or a porter in a building, and it was so to actually leave from being a porter and go on over in the evening time to be amongst theater folk, it just gave me a focus, and it was completely transformative, and it never changed after that. And I began to love Irish culture, which I abhorred when I grew up in Ireland. I didn't want to hear from W.B. Yeats or John Millington Synge. I mean, that's old Irish hat. Who wants it? And then I come over to America where I wanted to, you know, I wanted to go and, you know, go where Neil Young was and the Eagles were. They were all the, you know, the bands that I wanted. And then suddenly I was, you know, going around spouting W.B. Yeats.
It's so fascinating how life transforms us. How about you, Charlotte? How did you?
I was a little. I was either going to medical school or I'd had bad luck with colleges. I'd run off from a couple, and I was embarrassing my family, and so I went to nursing school, and I had a nurse's degree when I was 18 years old. And I wanted to go on with my education somehow. And so I went to Washington University in St. Louis to please my family so that they wouldn't be embarrassed about me anymore. And I got into a play, a Greek play, Hippolytus. And I stood up against the wall with my arm raised. I didn't know how to memorize lines. I really didn't know how to put a line in my head and say it at a given time. But I was in the chorus and got through it. But like Chiron, when the lights went up and I was in a lot of makeup slapped on my face and a Greek gown and standing up against a wall with my arm raised up reciting Hippolytus, I thought, oh, well, this is, I think I want to do some more of this. Well, I did a little more of it there, and then I got very lucky. I got very, very lucky and went to the Hartford stage and the Oslo Theater in Florida when I was very young and learned how to do it. And then eventually got to New York and became an actor.
You said you got lucky. Is that what? Can you be more? What do you mean that you were able to work at these places? Or
when I went to the Oslo Theater in Florida, there were a bunch of people there who were real actors and real directors and real theater technicians. Paul Widener was at the Hartford Stage Company, and he hired me to come there for a season. I stayed 7 seasons, and then I got very, very lucky, and I was hired by Mr. Stephen Porter and Hal Prince and Michael Montel to go to New York and be with the Phoenix Repertory Company, and that was my way into New York.
Oh, that's wonderful, because I know that Hal Prince came to...
Prince became a very close friend, close friend.
And in 1992, you directed one of his pieces, that Irish Rap, right?
I did.
Can you talk about how you both met, the circumstances of when you both met?
Kieran, what was the name of that play that we were in that Brian Murray directed when we met?
It was a play called Summer.
That's right, Hugh Leonard's play.
But it was Hugh Leonard's play, Summer, and it had been done off Broadway, but at the time I didn't have, I wasn't a member of Equity, and so an Equity wouldn't let me join because forget that part. So I was hired then as the dialect coach for the company.
And it's an Irish play.
I tried to instill in Charlotte at that time an Irish accent to absolutely no good result whatsoever. But then the show went down to Florida, to the Ponciana Playhouse in Palm Beach, and that time I was hired to be in the company, and that's where I met that's where I got to know Charlotte better, and we were friends then for a good many years before the Irish Rep began, actually. So we didn't go directly from that play into starting a company, because Charlotte, mostly because she was having a whole other Broadway career and film career, television career during those other years. She was on this one here. She was on a show that was before Saturday Night Live came up with it, but it was a show called The News is the News, where she was a newscaster on the show, and it was a sort of a skit on the news. Do you remember
the comedy show from 30 Rock, right where Saturday Night Live is now?
Well, fascinating. And I know you've 2 Tony Awards. I mean, both of you.
Oh, we're very accomplished, Cheryl. We're just so full of ourselves.
So what I love is that, you know, when you go to the Irish Rep, there you are. You're such a and sometimes you're selling tickets, Charlotte, and here you are. And I say to my friend, she's the director. And here she is selling tickets. She's ushering people to their seats.
Why I'm so glad you didn't weren't there to see me cleaning the bathrooms.
Oh. And look, why do you think for 31 years the Irish Rep has stayed it's such a force in theater?
I think we're very passionate about what we do, Kira.
Yeah, we put our we put all our any money that we have, we put it into our productions, you know. So we like high production values in as, you know, in as much as we can possibly do. We love our company and they come back over and over again, you know, which you know, it becomes a shorthand with the company. We know what they're capable of, and we know there's a joy to coming to work, and I think that joy comes across the footlights and goes into the audience, and I think that's something that's it's sort of undefinable, you know, but it's there.
And I love how you curate the works you do, you know, that you can see the Plow and the Star, you can see Juno and the Paycock, and then you'll see brand new works. And how do you curate? How do you determine?
We fight it out, Cheryl.
we say that a lot, that we fight it out, but we actually don't that much.
We don't fight much.
We agree with each other a lot about things. And if somebody comes in, I mean, people come to us with ideas and we listen, you know, and we read plays all the time. And then we try to find plays that are very well known plays that maybe haven't had an outing for quite some time, and see just how relevant they might be to the world that is today, you know. So it's what people usually do, you know. I guess it's you try to give you know, diverse programming as well, so that it's not the same thing that we do all the time. And some of our patrons, you know, you think, oh, well, that's not for me, but so what? Everything can't be for everybody all the time. You just have to go and try to, you know, give a mix.
What was there a moment where you felt, okay, we're here to stay, that we're not, you know, scrappy anymore? Not that you were ever scrappy, but was there a moment in your history where you felt, oh, you know, we can breathe a little easier, that we've arrived?
I can't wait to hear what you have to say, Kieran.
Well, I would say that it was certainly after we'd been around for about 6 years, so maybe 7 years, we had been in every darn theater in town renting, you know, in the Actors Playhouse, on Theater Row. We were at the Public. We were at a place on 54th Street. I forget the name of it now, but we had been in and it was really hard, because we would be in there for, you know, for the run of a show that we would have rented it for, say, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and then the show could either be a dismal failure and we need to get out earlier, or it was a show that was a hit and we didn't want to close and we would have to close. And that happened so much, and we'd have to load in sets and load out lights, and we were basically our office was an apartment in the building I was living in, and you know, it was tough. So we said, we really need to have a place that we call home, you know, and if we don't get that place, let's quit and give up. So we found this place on West 22nd Street. We got a 10-year or 12-year lease on it. It was a wonderful landlord. He gave us 6 months to fix the place up. And we just started to make it into a theater in 6 months. And, you know, we built two theaters. We started on January 1st, and we just began to do it, like, immediately. We just began to do stuff. And we hired an architect, and, you know, he came up with the plans as we were almost doing it. so that on September 5th of that year, we opened both theaters with shows. So it was done within 9 months. But that's just because economic necessity sometimes takes over, because we didn't have the money not to do it. And when people say, you know, how do you keep on going and stuff like that? He says, we can't afford not to.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, which leads me to what you're doing now. You have a whole roster of works that are available for streaming. Can we talk about that? How you've adjusted to this time, to the pandemic, and what you're bringing now to people who, because we can't physically go to 22nd Street to the theater. So what you're doing.
Charlotte, you want to answer that?
Well, as I told you, Gerald, I'm in St. Louis, and I thought when Kieran was ready with the touch of the poet to move to the stage from the rehearsal room, and he was going into tech rehearsals when the theaters in New York closed down, and I left for as I thought 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks maybe, and Kieran's sets were ready to go, and he was waiting to get on the stage, and everything stopped. And our wonderful staff never even thought of stopping. They just said, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? This is the way we're going to begin. And by God, we began, and we've never stopped. We have a staff of how many, Kieran?
We have a staff of 12.
Of 12. And each one of them has a job and an opinion, and we listen to them. They're wonderful, and that Kieran and I never stop either. We never stop talking about what we're going to do next, what interests us, what fascinates us, what would challenge us, and that's what we want to do, and so we're doing it.
Yeah. That's so phenomenal. For example, you have the New Shore play, The Gifts You Gave to the Dark, yes, which is specifically written for these times, right? And that's available for streaming now, right?
Indeed. We particularly loved that. That was sent to us and it was the associate director of the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, Katrina McLaughlin. And Katrina had this play, and she tried to make it happen, I think, in Ireland. They just didn't have the resources to do it. So they sent it to us. We really loved it. It seemed to be so much off the moment. It could have been like written weeks before. It was written, you know, when at the height of the COVID in Ireland. And it's a beautiful piece. And so she said, you know, if you guys are interested in this, I have some wonderful people in mind to do it. And of course, we already said, yes, we're interested before we even heard who she had. And honestly, the three actors who are in it are like some of the three of Ireland's greatest actors. And she got them to agree to do this play that was basically written to be performed on FaceTime. You know, it was written because it's the story of a son whose mom is on her deathbed, and he is unable to visit her because he is infected, and he can't go to her. So her brother, his uncle, holds up the phone to his mother so she can hear, and he's telling her he's coming to her. He's coming to her. And then they relive some beautiful moments in their lives. And it's all done on FaceTime, written for FaceTime.
Kieran, say who those actors are.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next.
Marty Yates, Sean McGinley, and Maura Mullins. Now, Maura Mullins won the Tony for The Beauty Queen of Leenane when she was out here. And she's like Ireland's leading actress. And she was, she didn't have to say a line, by the way. So I was always congratulating her on how did she learn those lines. All she had to do was moan a little bit in the bed every once in a while.
A dream role, Gerald, a dream, dream role.
And also you are presenting some digital productions of your favorite shows, all reimagined for the screen. Can you talk about that? What you've decided to put online?
We began our summer digital season, which sounds very grand. we began with Molly Sweeney, Brian Friel's Molly Sweeney, which Charlotte directed from St. Louis. I acted in that one because I had done it previous to that. And it was an easy start, that one, because it was a story from three different locations of people who were isolated themselves. So we were able to talk directly into the camera, and that one was quite easy. The next one after that was Reflections of Molly Bloom, which Aideen Maloney did. And it's basically Molly Bloom's soliloquy dramatized. And except it's supposed to be in Dublin, but Aideen was down in Miami. So we got a COVID Miami version of Molly Bloom. And the next one then was The Weir, Conor McPherson's The Weir. Which we got a little bit more ambitious with that. The story is five characters in a pub telling various stories, some ghost stories, and then things get very real. So we had to find a way to get all five characters into the same pub. Now, those five people who had done the play previous were currently in five different states around the country. So we had to find a way that when somebody pulled a pint in one state, they could hand over the pint to somebody in another state.
But you did, Kieran. You did.
We worked it out through green screens and Zoom.
Extraordinary. What does directing give you? Since you both started as actors, how did you transition to directing? And what does directing give you?
Well, it's scary. It's scary. I absolutely love it because I have the guts and balls to read a line. If I don't like the way somebody's reading it or doing it, I'll do it for them. To hell with it. I will. I didn't think I would ever like being in charge, but I kind of do like it. I like to have a say. Kieran?
I don't know where you ever got that. I have no idea where you ever got to say that, Gerald. I don't really know if I like to be in charge. You were in charge ever before you drafted a line. Oh, my God.
I faked it.
I began doing it. Charlotte directed, nearly all of the productions right up to a good part of our time doing it, and I absolutely love working with Charlotte as a director. She's my favorite director, so there's a shorthand between us, and I just absolutely love it. So I learned an awful lot from how she did it, I've benefited greatly from almost two decades of working with her and seeing how she treats actors. And she treats actors really, really well. And she makes it fun in the rehearsal hall. And that's kind of what you have to do, is just make sure that everybody feels that how they feel and how they that it counts, that it's the most important thing that they feel that they own what they're doing.
What is it, Kieran, that you love about Charlotte as a person and as a director? You said
I can't wait, Gerald.
You know, the same Charlotte.
Well, Charlotte has, from the moment I've met her, she is a force of nature, and she commands the attention. No matter what it is that she does, and whether she's right or wrong, she is just as emphatic. She brings life to things, and that's, you know, there's so many in our world, and we know it, that, oh my God, will this meeting ever end, or will this, you know, and I've been, you know, in some things outside of Irish Rep where I think, oh my God, will this project be done so I can go home? And when I say home, I mean go home to Irish Rep. But it's never so with her. It's you know, whether there's always an excitement in what she does, and she has a sense of humor.
Thank you, Kieran. I couldn't wait to hear this. All very flattering. When we had been going for a while, and Kieran said he wanted to direct a play, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster. But I mean, he was my partner, and he was half of us, so I had to say, fine, wonderful, okay. And then he did. He did, and I swear to you, a brilliant job, during which I learned so much and am still learning from him, because he's much more meticulous and much more serious than I am. And I envy him. I envy him, his meticulousness, because I don't have it.
Do you love a yin and yang? Is there a bad cop and a good cop between you, or you sort of split the... How does that work, running a theater company together?
Well, it has grown kind of that when I want something done that is not popular, I make Kieran do it.
Well, that's funny. Well, no, I was going to say that. No, we actually do. And in times if we've had to go and do anything that was going to be really a tough decision, we do it together generally. You know, it's our, you know, it's, yeah, we do. It's very hard otherwise to do it. And by the way, Charlotte is very meticulous.
I'm saying
you are very meticulous. I don't know what you mean by that. I'm not very meticulous. You should see her, and it's the most annoying thing you could possibly, you should see when a set goes onto the stage and she stops everything to go up and move a chair, like maybe 3 centimeters or maybe 4 centimeters. So she's not meticulous at all. No.
Those chairs are important.
Yes, because there's an economy of space, so it's pricey real estate, right? What was it, Charlotte, about the Irish sensibility? What made you fall in love with the Irish theater, or made you feel so devoted?
That's a great question, Gerald, because I was not a fan. I mean, I was not a fan because I did not know anything about it. And when I did The Plough and the Stars, I was absolutely overcome with the beauty of the language and the beauty of the characters. There's nobody like O'Casey, but I didn't know that. I really didn't know. And as I became aware of it, I grew more and more respectful and more in love with the Irish sound, the Irish language, and the Irish psyche, which is different from anybody else, any other psyche in the world. And there's something about it that's romantic, which I am an idiot, which is completely romantic and completely musical. And I've always been in love with music and musicals, and it is in there, and it right there for you to find, right there.
It's visceral. Yeah. I remember the first time I went to Ireland and going into a pub, and it was a Sunday night, and there were people of all ages, children sitting in this circle playing music. And it was like, it was soul enriching. It was the most beautiful thing to see, just people around the circle in the pub on a Sunday night playing music. And everybody,
I love that you said children, Gerald, because I know they're there with their parents. I know they're there.
And did you grow up going to Ireland, or when did you, or was that part of your life?
Mine, I had been to Ireland a couple of times. One time I actually went with Hal and Judy Prince just to see theater there. And but I knew nothing about it. I know a lot now.
Yeah. And Kira, I know you said you didn't appreciate the Irish theater. What would you like people to know about this incredibly rich culture of theater?
As you say, Gerald, it is an incredibly rich culture, and it has it always has two sides to every question. Two interesting, fascinating, beautifully written, beautifully spoken sides to everything. It's the greatest culture in the world, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a question that we're often asked, and it's one that I keep on grappling with as to why this small island, off the coast of Europe, has such a rich history with theater just to reel off some of the greats of the theater that came from there, like George Bernard Shaw, Oscar Wilde, Sheridan, Congreve. I mean, then that's just from the classical world. We go to like Brian Friel and Conor McPherson and Tom Murphy, Edna O'Brien, Marina Carr. I mean, there's so many like wonderful writers on this rock that's over there. And why is that? And and it may be a cliche at this time to say that it's a nation of storytellers because oral tradition was very strong and prevalent. They weren't allowed to express themselves in their own language, so they took the English language and made it their own and made all those things. But the big part of it, I think, is the storytelling. And it's because they do tell a story. They'll tell you a story. If you stop on the road to ask directions, which way to the Murphys, they'll say, well, if you go up that road and there's a crossroads there, now that's a crossroads that Jimmy Jack used to own. He used to own that house on that crossroads, but he's dead now. He's dead now. And so if there's a left turn, don't go that way. Go right. And they'll make a story out of anything. So when it comes then to sitting down and putting like we were talking to Conor McPherson about the Weir and how he formed the Weir. He had an uncle that was down in County Leitrim that he used to go and visit. And he always remembers that going into a pub there and a guy coming in and walking right in behind the bar and pouring himself a pint of stout. And he thought that was the strangest thing he'd ever seen in his life. He'd come from Dublin and he saw this. And then from there, he just basically wrote this piece about starting there. And he said, it's just where people just come in and they start to talk. And that's all it is. And it's so it has a magic all of its own that's there that maybe others don't. It's just weird. I don't know why Scotland doesn't have it. We have a lot of things in common with Scotland. They used to say that the Scotch were the Irish who could swim. So you'd think they were going to be the same people. Kenneth Tynan once said that, the basis of all English literature is Irish people. He said, except for Shakespeare, who he called our luminous accident. The rest of it were just, so it's a mystery.
It is fascinating, when you think of it, like you said, the small island and all the poets and artists, and it's such a rich, rich culture. And I'm so thrilled that you brought that to you. What is your dream for the Irish Rep?
I suppose the dream, Charlotte, you can you answer this, and I'll say that I suppose our dream is that it's sustained and it goes on well beyond our time there, and that's something we probably have to work on some more to make sure that it's ready to be passed along and keep going. Because I can tell you one thing, it can be sustained from a literary point of view. So we just have to make sure that it's sustained from a financial point of view. That's my dream. Charlotte?
Well, I think I'd like more people to see our productions. Maybe we might take them around to other places and other cities as soon as we can. If we ever get back to our beautiful theater, I can't wait to make plans like that. I think we can do that. I love what we're doing. I want to do more of it.
Yeah,
and like Kieran, I want it to go on. We have been incredibly lucky enough in this climate and in this pandemic time to have been offered the Players in Manhattan has been closed for a while, and we were offered that space to do something in. And because it's safe in there and because we adhered to every precaution, God knows, we were able to do in that fancy, gorgeous 1888 Stanford White designed mansion of two cabaret artists doing Noel Coward. So that's done. And it's coming up.
Well, say who they are.
Who is it? Who directed it?
I did.
You did virtually, or
yes.
I had done it.
We had done it in our other space, in our small space, in our theater before. So they were not new to me. I knew what they could do, and they've both been doing it forever and ever. And I knew them, so it was a pleasure, and we had a great time doing it. And it's done, and it's coming up.
And those two people are KT Sullivan and Steve Ross, who are fantastic cabaret stars. And it was such a pleasure to be in their company during this time and doing the Songs and Letters of Noel Coward, directed by Miss Moore on Zoom.
And produced by Mr. O'Reilly. He was there with a mask on every day.
What was that like directing virtually for you? I know you said you had worked with them before, but what kind of challenge was that?
Challenge, Gerald. You said the word. It was a challenge. Like the Weir was a challenge for Kira, never having done it before. I mean, you show up. Yeah, you show up and you do what you do. What you learn every 5 minutes something new and hope to retain it for the next time.
And what is the official name of the Noel Coward?
Love Noel.
But it's available for 6 performances only.
Okay.
And it's starting from next Tuesday. If you go to our website, www.irishrep.org, you can book a ticket to go and see the show.
Oh, yours, Carol.
It's for free with a suggested donation, is basically what it is. Given the circumstances of where we are in the world, is that we have to plan for basically a fall digital season, because it doesn't seem like the theaters will be opening this fall yet. So we're working on that right now. We plan to announce the season within the next couple of weeks, and we have some exciting things coming up, and we will continue to do that. We will, if people can't come to us, we're going to come to them, and we're thrilled to say that we are attracting a whole new audience around the country and around the world. And it's we basically, in this past few months, more people have seen our shows online than have actually perhaps seen them in person. So that's the good news. That's the silver lining in this madness.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Tiba. It's such an honor to talk to you both. And here's to many, many, many more decades
Thank you so much.
Of the Irish Repertory Theater. Thank you.
Cheryl, hope to see you there very soon.
Bye-bye. The theme song was written by Tom McGovern. This episode was edited by Kyle Moore, and the talent was booked by Anna Stroud.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.